Good. So I want to continue with sort of what I've been doing the last couple of times I've been here, was kind of answer questions that have come to me, and I've taken live questions, but I also want to respond to questions that people send to me. So I kind of found three that I think kind of work well together. So we'll see where we go. So the first question was, I was hoping to have you possibly attend to the question of ego. And he refers to a book, Dharma book, refers that, that talks about the Western ego. And this person is saying, as a Westerner who has what most, well, Westerners kind of, you know, American, European Westerners, I guess he's referring to. As a Westerner who has what most Westerners seem to have, which is a fragile ego, I was wondering if you could elaborate on the Buddhist view of dealing with ego and working with it as opposed to trying to eliminate it. The second question, and again, I think they very much tie in, says, I have come to realize that I am trapped in self-limiting perceptions of who I am, what I can do, what I can't do. I have so many self-limiting beliefs about who I am, my unchanging personality, what I can and cannot do because of who I am. Can you help me with this? So this sort of ties in with self. And then the the third one, which is when my stuff, everybody knows what stuff is, when my stuff comes up, it's funny, we have these expressions and we all know what they mean, okay? When my stuff comes up during the day, I often feel like the stuff is now calling the shots. Even though I want to not cultivate unwholesome mind states, they just sweep me away. How can I prevent them from taking me over? So what do you think? I think they're good questions we all deal with. Yeah, so let's start with the first one and the second one first. So the question of ego, the question of self, is really fundamental to Buddhism, meditation, Buddhist psychology, the way we understand the mind. And it is different than Western psychology and the way most of us have been raised, okay? So it's actually usually the teaching that is hardest for us to kind of get a handle on, okay? In early Buddhist teachings called the three marks of existence, the first two, which are impermanence, everything is constantly changing, everything is impermanent, nothing is solid, nothing stays the same. We can get that intellectually. Yeah, everybody goes, yeah, everything's changing all the time. History, life, right? My thoughts, my feelings, right? Change. Nothing stays the same. We all get that. The second one, which is dukkha, a little harder for us to get, and I won't go into it today. Dukkha sort of means unsatisfactoriness. It really means the unsatisfactoriness of worldly life. Now, since most of us are in the world, we're not monastics, we live in worldly life, we go, what? You know, we don't like that one, do we? Because our whole ethos of our culture is what? That we can find satisfaction, happiness, in life, right? Now Buddhism, it doesn't deny or it doesn't negate worldly happiness, right? So it's really talking about that worldly life and the happiness of worldly life is fundamentally unsatisfactory, primarily because it doesn't last. You see, that's its unsatisfactoriness, right? It's like we're looking for something. We're looking for happiness. You know, we're looking for, a deep sense of well-being. And yet we go about it by seeking experiences that only last for a short time, such as pleasurable experiences, such as getting what I want. You know, the pleasure, the happiness comes from getting what I want, only lasts a short time, right? So it's in this way that it's fundamentally unsatisfactory. And the third one is anatta or non-self. So I think, again, I think the first two we can sort of get our heads around, but non-self is more difficult. Westerners have a fragile ego. See, I'm not sure what that means. Because in Buddhism, it doesn't really talk about fragile egos in that sense. But it does talk a lot about that at the root of our suffering is this strong sense of self, of I, me, my. So it's not that we don't have a subjective sense of me, and we don't have a kind of an executive sense of, you know, there's a part of us that kind of takes care of business, right? Which is important for functioning in life. Okay, so it's not denying there's an executive function of something called the self, and there is this subjective sense that, you know, this is me, right? We all have a subjective sense, this is me, right? What Buddhism says, this subjective sense of me is not a real solid thing. It is a, and this ties in with the second question, which is I've come to realize that I'm in self-limiting perceptions, who I am, what I can do, what I can't do, many beliefs about who I am, my unchanging personality, what I can and cannot do because I, who I am. So in Buddhism, what it says is, just stay with me and I'll take questions, is that if we investigate, and this is a meditative practice, if we investigate deeply, like embedded meditation, like we turn this way and we look into ourselves, we cannot find a separate, distinct me. Even though we talk about it all the time and believe there's a separate. If we investigate our bodies, right? If we do a complete investigation, if we do a complete autopsy on our bodies, we will find parts, subparts, less parts, all kind of interacting, but we will not find one thing called a body, right? I mean, we all get that, right? I mean, we won't, if we separate all the parts, we won't find any one part called a body, as well as we won't find, let's say it's this body, we won't find any little thing running around called Fred who's kind of pulling the strings, right? We won't find that at all, even though we refer to this body as Fred. Well, what happens when we look in our mind, right? I mean, most of us would agree we're body minds, right? I mean, that's what a human being is, we're body and mind. Well, we look in our mind, and what do we find in our mind? And those who meditate will know what I'm talking about. We find what? Anybody ever look in their mind? What do we find? Thoughts. Thoughts endlessly arising. Anything else you find in your mind? Perceptions, more perceptual, you know, we're perceiving things, right? We're perceiving sights, we're perceiving sounds, smells, tastes, touch, thoughts, feelings, perceptions. What else do we see in our mind? What? What feelings, emotions? Mental formations. What? The whole construct. That's created by thought, right? So we find a very well-constructed mental experience that's constructed of thoughts, beliefs, memories, but we will not find a central player. Who's that central player that we believe it all belongs to or it's all happening to? Me. And this is something that the Buddha in his deep meditation realized. There is this whole process in my body mind, but there's no central player. There are thoughts, but he could never find a thinker. This is very different than the way we grew up and have learned. See? Next time you're meditating, and you're observing your thoughts, go, well, there's got to be, you know, the thoughts have to be coming from somewhere, right? There's got to be somebody thinking these thoughts. And we would usually say, who's thinking these thoughts? I am, right? I mean, we're sane human beings. I am. But then if we look for this I who's thinking these thoughts, we won't find anybody. And yet we believe that there is some solid thing there. It's hard for us to believe that we're just involved in a process of many variables, just like everything else, right? Now, this is kind of interesting. Could be just another kind of interesting podcast you might listen to and go, it's very interesting, right? But the implications of this is not just the realm of deep meditators and philosophers and all that, but it's so important to us, and why the Buddha made it like one of the primary things is because why do we suffer in life? Why do human beings suffer in life? Which was the Buddha's primary concern, to end human suffering. And he realized that the prime mover of human suffering was not the construct, the narrative, like we all have a narrative, right? Our narrative is what? I was born here, and da, 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 and this is done. This is my experience when I was growing up. This is my family. These are belief systems. We create a narrative for ourselves of who I. But it's a narrative based on thought. It's a narrative based on belief and ideas. It's not based on the one who is experiencing all that, the one who's aware of all that. You see, and in Buddhism, we distinguish between this self that has been constructed, and each of us has a strong construct. But not only do we have a strong construct, but all our experiences, from the minute we get up to the time we go to bed, is all being filtered, interpreted, skewed in the direction of what? Of this construct of self, which manifests in what way? My likes, my dislikes. I'm pro this, I'm anti that, right? I'm for this, I'm against that. I like this, I don't like that. I want this, I don't want that. I need this, I don't need that. So we are endlessly operating the world from this place of what? Self, right? I mean, just take a moment, just to reflect a moment. Do you know what I'm talking, before we go on? So I'm not making a judgment like this is bad or good yet. Well, we can come to the conclusion ourselves whether it's bad or good. But does everybody understand that that's what we're doing? And everybody's different, right? So the way Scott has constructed Scott, who Scott is and who Scott isn't and what Scott believes in and what are his strengths and what are his weaknesses and what is he capable of and what is he not capable of and whether he's lovable or unlovable or, you know, strong or weak or he's a Republican or a Democrat, I mean, whatever, you know. I mean, you know, and there could be thousands of these things. You know, there's so many things, our ethnic, our gender, I mean, there's so many identities that we carry. And we are entering the world as a construct of all these identities, right? So just close your eyes. Is that true? Are you aware that, you know, we are constantly throughout the day, whatever our experiences is, they're all being filtered through these constructs. And the central construct is me. when we meet somebody, we immediately filter, we immediately put them in our box, right? We immediately put them in our box, who they are, what we think about these kinds of people, you know what I mean? Or, you know, based on our ideas, our judgments, our belief system, based on past experience, we are not experiencing life and people purely, cleanly. We're filtering everything through our constructs. Now, why is that a problem? Oh, and by the way, since I just made the bizarre statement that constructs is all, the self-construct is all based on words, language, right? Or belief system, the whole thing, it's all words. Please remember, none of us came into this world with language, did we? We didn't have any constructs at all. So the construct of who I think I am and this whole elaborate construct of me has been created over years. And yet it seems so real, doesn't it? Don't you think, right, Abdullah, who you think you are seems very real to you. Your beliefs, your ideas, your thoughts, right? It seems real. You know, seems like that's who I am. But you know what? You see this gentleman next to you, who I don't know. See, if you had been born in his family, it would be totally different. You'd still be you, in essence. But, you know, the whole, right? So it's not necessarily bad, but this is the way it is. It gets bad when we strongly identify with it. So what happens when you enter relationships, when you have a strong identity of who, what you are and what's right and wrong and how things should be, and basically think that everybody else should be there to meet whose needs? My needs, right? It's because that's what self does. Self is only concerned with who? Let's all be honest. We know that voice inside us, right? Self is what? Self-absorbed, right? It only is really, I mean, it does loosen up a bit sometimes, but at the end of the day, it's primarily concerned about its own well-being, its own happiness, getting its needs and desires met. Is that not true? Keeping itself safe, you know, all those things. Okay. The trouble is, if we lived alone, self wouldn't be a problem, would it? Right, if we all lived on our own little island, it wouldn't, you know, my island, I could control it all. It wouldn't be a problem. The problem is we enter the world. And when we enter the world, we are entering the world with what? Lots of other people. And the problem is they get the same thing that we got going on. Right? They have their total construct of who they are and who that and how you should do things and you know and how you should meet my needs and right and what's right and what's wrong and right how to do this and how to do that and how you shouldn't do this and right. Now what happens when this one strongly believes in themselves, this is right, meets this one, strongly believes in themselves and this is right, come together in relationship? Well said. Right. You know, what happens when groups of people in society who have the same thing going on, thinking their beliefs, their you know, his narrative of how to be is true, meets another group that doesn't see it their way? What happens? You know, war, divisiveness, right. So, yeah. So, that is the problem, that when that if we are self-centered, if we are self-absorbed, if we are, no matter how nice we appear on the outside, inwardly really just, you know, focused on ourself and our needs and our wants, there will always be suffering. Okay, remember we said, this is the problem. This is where, this is why the Buddha said, this is the cause of suffering. It's really about in relationship. And human beings, we live in relationship, don't we? I mean, we cannot be born without a relationship, right? I mean, we have relationship is the basis of human life. We're in relationship. We're in relationship to each other. We're in relationship to, you know, people in the world. We're in relationship to nature. I mean, we're always in relationship. But self is only concerned about what? Let's be honest, is only concerned about what? Yeah. Itself and me. So therefore, in relationship to life, self gets hurt. Why does self get hurt? Self gets angry, irritated. Why does self get angry and irritated? Yeah, self gets worried, self gets scared, right? Self is envious, self is jealous, self is disappointed, right? That whole drama of what we would call human life, you know, it's like, isn't that normal, right? Wouldn't we say that's all normal? Wouldn't most people say, well, that's just normal life, Fred? The Buddha said, no, this is suffering. Because it's based on this fundamental false perception of identification. So in that sense, right, the issue of self and self-centeredness, narcissism, self-absorption, becomes very central to why human beings cause suffering to themselves and cause so much suffering to others. So can we just chew on that for a moment? Why don't you just chew on that for a few moments? I mean, does that make sense to you? And in terms of the second question, all these beliefs we have, you know, this person has, I realize I have all these self-limiting perceptions of who I am, what I can do, what I can't do, beliefs about who I am and my personality can't change and this is who I am. These are not, none of that is true. Right? We are limited by our beliefs about ourselves in life. I mean, there's some things that are true, right? I mean, such as what? What? You can't sing. Well, no, you can sing. You may not, but that's be. Yeah, you. But you. Well, you. But you can sing. I mean, there are some things we can't do, like we can't fly. Like that's a realistic belief. Is that true? I mean, if anybody thinks, well, I know I heard Fred give this talk on everything is, you know, perception. Maybe it's just a false perception I had that I can't fly. So please don't test it out, okay? Or if you do test it out on the ground somewhere. So there are some fundamental things that, you know, that are just true about all human beings. But all our other beliefs, I can't do this. I'm teaching a class now on stress and anxiety on Thursday nights. What's stress or anxiety? It's all about our thoughts about life. I can't handle this. Right? What's worry about? I can't handle this. I can't deal with this. This is going to be too much for me. Those are just what? Thoughts. That's not real. No, I can't do that because I'm worried what someone's going to think about me. So we limit ourselves. Oh, I could never do that. Well, why couldn't you do it? If you ever ask yourself a question, you know, why can't I do it? You'd have to go, well, I mean, there are certain, you know, like, yeah. So I can't bench press 200 pounds, okay? But I could test that in reality. But most of us don't test our beliefs. You think you're unlovable. So what's going to happen? You don't test that belief, so you go through life acting as if that's true, or I'm not worthy, or, you know, I'm bad. People have all kinds of beliefs about themselves that limit them, and they're not true. They're beliefs. What's a belief made of? What's the substance of a belief? Thoughts. Can anybody reach into their mind and bring out a thought and go, yeah, thoughts are real things. Here's my thought. I'm an unlovable person. I'm bad. I'll never do this. I'll never have that. Right? Those are thoughts. But if you have them, they will what? They will affect your life. So these kind of deeper, you know, things with self, ego, and how it's just constructed of thoughts and belief systems, identifications. While it sounds kind of deep, it's really very important to get, because the Buddha's teaching is all about liberating us from our suffering, so we can do what? So we can lead happy, meaningful lives without all this ego static, self-created static, anger, fear, jealousy, blah, 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 blah. Desires, needs, right? You could be sitting at home very happy, right? And all of a sudden you'll have a thought, what? I really need this. Anybody ever have that? I really need this. Right? And then what do? See, and the need, you know, sometimes people just go act and they're impulsive. Let's go, well, I'll just go buy it, you know? But then now a lot of people are going to think about it and kind of agitate us a little bit, right? It's a thought. It arises. I wonder what's in the fridge. It's a thought. You know, I need, I want. You know, there are some basic needs and wants, you know, food, shelter, water, that's true. But so many human beings, they have so many needs and wants. They're just all day long. They're just a bundle of wants and needs, right? And oftentimes those things lead us in not very healthy and wholesome ways. And the other problem, of course, as I mentioned earlier, is what happens when you meet this important need or desire you have? You finally what? Satisfy that need or want. How does it feel at that moment? Good. Anybody hear what? Yeah, it feels good. Happy. At peace. I don't have that need or want anymore. I'm not agitated. I'm not, you know, I'm not needy. I'm not, oh, this feels great. And how long does that last? A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. It could be more longer, but eventually it what? Dissipates. Because things can't give us real meaning at all. So then we are forced to what? Repeat over and over and over again. This is the world of self. Now again, the Buddha didn't say, all right, I get it. Self is the enemy, kill the self. Someone goes, oh yeah, self has got to be killed. Destroy it. Destroy myself. Repress it. Deny it. No, but we need to understand it. So when we hear that voice, when we feel all the waves, we're constructing what we're dealing with, and we know that it's not taking us in a good direction, right? We can do something different. So this really comes into the third part, which is, you know, when I feel my stuff comes up during the day, stuff is calling the shots. I don't want to cultivate unwholesome mindsets, but they just sweep me away, right? So everybody knows this experience, right? I mean, probably all of us want to be different at some point. We want to change. I got to stop having these kinds of thoughts. I got to stop, you know, ruminating or obsessing about this thing. It's only causing me suffering, right? Everybody know what I'm talking about. And yet what happens? What? We keep doing it. I'm really going to watch my anger. I'm really going to watch what I say. You know what I mean? I'm no longer just going to keep running these same miserable stories over and over about he did this and she didn't do that. And right? You know, it's not good for me. And we say to ourselves, what? That's it. From now on, I'm not going to think these kinds of thoughts. And then what happens? 5 minutes later, what? It comes back. Okay. What do? We don't want to be swept away anymore. Well, there are a number of things we can do. I mean, there's a lot of our programs here about how to change this. But, you know, the key thing, the first thing is, to be aware. To be aware. A lot of times we are swept away. A lot of times we get into this obsessive rumination and repeating over and over. And we don't intervene because we're just not aware. We don't name what's going on inside us. This is mindfulness. This is bringing meditation into our daily life. We're aware. I know what's arising in me, right? That's when, for those of you who are new, when we were, how many people, by the way, is this your first time today? Oh. And how many people, they're kind of new to this whole thing? Yeah. So what we're doing in the hall and learning how to meditate and to, you know, calm our minds, learning how to, you know, things arise, but we don't get swept away in meditation. We're learning this so in our daily life, when it happens for real, we have a capacity to be self-aware, to know what's going on in our minds. This is so important, right? And secondly, to have criteria to know, yeah, these are mind states I don't want to cultivate anymore, right? Now, having made that choice or decision, is it going to still arise 5 minutes later? Of course it is. Why is it going to arise 5 minutes later? Because it's got lots of energy. Because we've been doing it for so long. So we have to be patient, but we have to be willing to retrain. It's a retraining. I mean, we know about retraining our minds and muscle memory and all that, but we don't often know about that I can retrain my own personal mind, right? To respond to things differently, deal with things differently, change how I deal with things. So it takes awareness, self-awareness. It takes ability to have criteria, you know, to be able to know when a negative mind state or unwholesome mind state has arisen. And it takes a willingness to over and over again intervene to the best of your ability. And if we do this with persistence and constancy, we call that here practice, we keep practicing, we will over time get better. We have to. Because why? Because when we were infants, we didn't have this problem. That's my only proof. We developed this. We unfortunately develop in our life lots of bad habits when hopefully we've developed lots of good habits. And so we have a lot of bad mental habits, right? We focus so incessantly on the negative. There's something, I don't know if that's basic to human beings or something about just our culture or society. We just love to go negative, right? And people go, wow, you know, isn't that like a big thing today in the media and all that? Everybody's just so immediately everybody's going negative, right? But it's only happening out there in culture because it's happening in our minds. And now with social media and all this stuff, we have a wonderful way that we can just like let everybody know every negative thought we have and find out that what? Hundreds of thousands of other people have the same negative thought that I do. Let's all get together and be even more negative. I mean, it's in a certain sense, it's not a joke anymore, but you know what I mean? But like, where does it all come from? You know, so we understand, wow, yeah. So what we see played out in society is stuff that human beings do unfortunately in their minds. So we need to change that. Coming back to self, and then I want to take some questions. So in Buddhism, beside understanding all that stuff about ego and how it's a construct and identification and all that, you know, and seeing our self-centeredness and our self-absorption as being, you know, such a source of suffering for ourselves and for in relationship, what's the answer beside this internal work? The real answer is we learn to be other-centric. Now, does the ego like that? No. Says, Fred, you're here to serve me, right? I want you to use all your energy, all your willpower, all your intelligence, you know, all your capabilities to manipulate the world to get my needs met, right? That's the commandment, that's the instruction of self, right? Does everybody, you know that voice? Right, that's the instruction. And so what gets us out of that, and the other thing about that kind of self-centered way of being, the truth is it doesn't make us happy. We feel alone, we feel separate, we feel alienated from others, you know, because we are living life in this prison of self. So, to become other-centric is in a deep way the answer, right? To begin to care about making other people happy. I mean, I know you can't make other people happy, but you know, you, in the actions of your body, speech, and mind, you do things that facilitate people's well-being. You let people know you care about them. You're aware of other people's needs and wants, right? And you focus on how can I help them meet their needs? Now, the interesting thing is that feels good. That feels good. It's really bizarre. Because the message of self is, Fred, you want to be happy, just meet all my needs and keep me happy, right? And then everything will be wonderful. But it doesn't work because I'm really not happy, right? But, you know, there's like only one of me, there's many of you. So if I begin to focus on the well-being of everyone, including me, it's not like, you know, you know, this is like not asceticism or masochism or anything. You know, it's like, yeah. This is the way to get out of the world of self, the prison of self, the limitations of self. So many wrong messages. Don't do this, you can't do this. Things you know are good for you, but self is telling you what? Don't do it. You don't want to do that, right? Stay home with me in our neuroses. With my fears, and my anxieties, and my resentments, my hurts. Stay home with me. You know the world of self, right? And it's always telling us, stay home with me. Aren't I good company for you? Truth is, self is not good company so much until we transform it. When we transform it, that it becomes an intelligent self, a loving self, a compassionate self. You know what I'm saying? Then that's a nice person to hang out with. So let me stop now. Okay. So again, people in the hall, we put our hands together. So again, for those who are new, that's when you want to ask a question. You put your hands together. And people online, just please chat it into Bill. There's a chat function. So I'm open to questions. I mean, and for those who are new, you can challenge me and go, this doesn't make sense, or what about this or that? Don't be shy. It's important that we understand this. It's always hard to be the first person, but yes. So again, taking questions.
Pretty much everything that you've said makes a lot of sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
My question is about when you're looking inside and trying to find that self you're mm-hmm. talking about, and who's doing all those thoughts, who's creating those thoughts, created that construct.
Mm-hmm.
What comes to mind is that there has to be something that's this consciousness. You know, it's like I'm not like a piece of wood. You know what I mean? There is a consciousness there of that.
Yeah. Right.
You say that that's what's creating those thoughts, but how do I define that as an individual?
Well, you don't have to.
Sense, but.
Yeah, so that's good. Yeah, so we, because let's just take this life. We came into this world with conscious awareness, right? Even as infants, we were aware, right? We saw, we heard, we smelled, we tasted, we felt, right? So we were conscious, aware, right? So that fundamental conscious awareness is the basis of it all. And out of that, you know, we learned language. Depending on, you know, what country you grew up in, you learned a language. So you learn to call this, somebody else learned to call the same thing that. We learn a language. And then we learn belief systems. And we learn that this is my name, and this is your name, and this is your stuff, and this is my stuff. And, you know, it's all constructed. But it's all constructed on this fundamental awareness. So if I say to myself, who am I really? We have to, you know, it gets kind of deep. And yet, it all functions so well. The thing that makes us malfunction is this self-centeredness and this belief that we're a separate self, because that causes all the emotional affliction and all the angst and all the agitation. Yeah. Other questions? Really, everybody just buys this hook, line, and sinker? Everybody swallowing the Kool-Aid? Come on. Yes, in the back, just wait. We have a lot of people online, they want to hear your question. Can you give her, what's your name?
Ely.
What?
Ely.
Ely?
Ely?
Yeah, can we give her the, yeah.
So basically my question is, what is the balance of, you know, serving others and serving self?
Yeah. Well said. Your name is Ely?
Healy.
Yeah. Okay, Healy. So you say it's a balance, right? Now the balance is something that we all need to discover, as opposed to going, this is the balance. You see what I'm saying? So, you know, how much care does a baby need? 100%, right? How much care does a teenager need? At least in their point of view, what? What? What, zero? Right? Okay. So it depends on where you're at, right? Right? Some of us are at a place where we have to give more awareness of ourselves and care to ourselves because we are learning to heal ourselves. We're learning how to, a different way to be in the world. So we have to be a little more inward, okay? So our ability to, you know, be consistently there for others, you know, may be somewhat limited, but it still can always be done, right? But over time, you know, as we heal, as we become more open, our hearts become more open, and we don't have all this, we don't have issues, or we don't have, as it was called, stuff. You see, if we have a lot of stuff, well, then we're gonna have to deal with that stuff, right? If we don't have a lot of stuff, there's not all that much to deal with. If we don't have any stuff, whew, look at all that space. You know, so like if you had a house, do you live somewhere, Healy? You live somewhere? Now, if your house was filled to the brim with stuff, right? You'd have to be dealing with stuff all day, wouldn't you? Just going around. But if there was less stuff, more space, you would have. I mean, is that, you see, but it's got to be a balance. I mean, we have to understand that at a certain level, self-care becomes self-centeredness. Self-care becomes a kind of an unhealthy self-absorption. Right? I mean, like, do you bathe? I don't want to get too personal. Like, you bathe daily. Right. I mean, how long do you spend in the shower or something? 20 minutes. Okay. I mean, you don't spend 2 hours just really just loving it. You see, we might say that's self-absorption. Right? You spend, you know, 2 hours in the shower just bathing my body. I mean, do you understand? It's the same, right? Now, I'll be honest with you. When you say 20 minutes, I go, wow, that's a long shower. See, if you'd asked me, I would have said 5 to 10 minutes. So, I mean, but you see, but I would say that's all within normal ranges, you see. But if Healy said, well, you know, I usually spend 2 to 3 hours in there, you know, maybe a little self-absorption, right? You know, maybe somebody's waiting for the shower. Oh, do we remember that? Maybe somebody's waiting for the, you know, like anybody have teenage kids? You know, like usually, I don't know, you know, like bathrooms, right? Like there's somebody waiting to use the bathroom, right? Like they're oblivious because they're totally absorbed in what? Themselves. They could stay in there all day. Now, you know, we give children a little slack because we realize they're children, right? So their self-absorption maybe is, you know, something to work through. But, you know, as we get older, that self-absorption becomes a little problematic. So did that answer your question, Healy? Bill, yes.
From online Fed, when you are being other-centric, how can you provide support to others who abuse their ego wants?
Who abuse what?
Their own ego wants. They abuse it. They're very self-centered. How do you deal with those?
Yeah, things? So these are good questions. So you know, because often people hear this other-centric, does this mean like I'm a doormat? I mean, if somebody's, you know, really, it makes them happy to, you know, be verbally abusive to me, should I, since I'm other-centric and I want them to be happy, should I just give into this? Or this person is saying what? How should I, what was the last part of the thing?
Yeah, when you are being other-centric, how can you provide support to others who abuse their ego wants, what the ego wants?
How can you help them?
Yes.
Yeah, well, we want to help end suffering, right? So if somebody is, I don't know, what could I say? So let's say somebody's bulimic, you know, and they're just getting skinnier and skinnier and skinnier. And you know that, and you know they got a problem, but you say to them every time, Richie, you're really looking good. I mean, this is, wow, you're really slim. See? Now, this may make them happy, right? But it's not really helping them, is it? So we need to be aware that in our helping of others, are other-centric, that we are nurturing wholesomeness. So this is a key point. Right? We want to nurture wholesomeness, right? So, I mean, if you have a drug addict friend and you say, oh, you know, I'll pick up your stuff for you this week. I mean, you're probably very busy. You know, that may make them happy and they may really like you, but it may not be what? Really supporting what is wholesome for their life. So there has to be some intelligence, some discernment. Basically in Buddhism, you know, fundamentally the biggest help we can give another human being is to have them end their suffering and to show them the way to end their suffering. But along the way, there are many ways that we can help human beings, right? Many ways we can be there for each other. Now, again, I would, you know, we can begin, I mean, it sounds strange, but many of us have, you know, coming back to Healy's thing about self-care, I mean, many of us aren't that way with ourselves yet, right? We don't look at ourselves as someone who needs to be happy, who someone doesn't want to suffer, right? So how can I be helpful to the real me? You know, because lots of times we look and we see, wow, I'm doing all kinds of things that really cause me unhappiness. You know, I want to help myself. So oftentimes we need to begin with ourselves. And that's a good thing, right? And then we may look around our world, people we live with, people we're in relationship with, and go, am I really supporting their happiness in life in a good way? Am I really aware of their needs and wants? Am I really seeing that their construct of self and what's right and wrong and how things should be done and shouldn't is like, they got the same thing I do? You know, it's like, oh, so maybe I should try to understand them a little better and try to understand their construct and let them know my construct so we can learn how to be together in harmony rather than fighting all the time because the way I see the world and my constructs, you know, are is right. And you're there to meet my needs. And this one goes, well, my way of seeing the world and my constructs are right. And you're there to meet my needs, right? So, you know, opening up in that way can create greater harmony and understanding. And then we move out. There may be other people in our families' circles, in our friendship circles, at work, you know? I mean, so we don't need to go big yet, okay? We can begin small, just begin with ourselves and our closest relationships. You know, how can I begin to transform them? You know, how can I get out of this egocentricity, this self-centeredness? Right? Care about others. You know, how they might see this, what they may think about this. You know, how do they see things? Try to understand another human being. Why do they do what they do? You know, maybe they mean well. Maybe there are things they don't understand. How can I help them? Okay? Other questions? I think there's a family program. I think the kids are coming in soon. So hang on, it's usually a trip. Anything else? Quick one.
What's the difference between a baby's awareness, comma, ego, and constructed persona?
Well,
which, if any, is the self?
Again, the self is we're talking about a construction that has an identity. The baby has an awareness, it has basic needs. When the baby is hungry, what does it do? Cries. When the baby's cold, what does it do? Or it's got a full diaper, what does it do? So the baby is aware and it responds, but it's a natural response. It's not coming like, you know, where's my mom and dad? You know what I mean? I'm in here for, you know, they're supposed to be here to serve me. You know, they just, so that's that gets constructed over time. Okay? And that's where it gets problematic. We forget that it's constructed. So we will end now. Thank you. I know this is deep. Gets us reflecting.